Session number 5868, Horton Mandy, part 4.
As I told you on the other side of this tape, that I'd tell you how I first got my lot of wounds. Well, that, of course, as you might guess, was at Plug Street Wood. Well, now, just at that time, it wasn't all that far away from where we were to the Ypres front, and also L60. Well, just at that time, there was a large battle going on, what was called the Battle of L60, and that was led and performed by the Canadian Army when it came over. And the battle was led by Colonel Burchill. Now, strange as it may seem, Colonel Burchill was Captain Burchill's brother, and he led that attack, blowing a bugle horn the same as if he was out hunting. He was well known for that, and he went led them over the top, but he was killed. Now, the Burchill family, they were very, very wealthy. As I told you about Joe Scragg, after the war, he was invited to go to the family for what he'd done with Captain Burchill. But he didn't go. He should have done, but he didn't go. But they sent him a cheque for £100. Well, that was a lot of money in those days. Well, now, let's get back and tell you what happened to me. Well, while that battle was going on at L60, the Germans were very, very jumpy. And they gave us a pasting as well, shell fire, and knocked a big hole in the barbed wire in front of our trenches. Well, during the day, Pinky Brown came along. I stood talking to a couple of our chaps, and he came up to me and he said, I want you to get 2 volunteers to come over and patch that wire up tonight. Well, these 2 chaps straight away said, yes, we'll come. So that was all right. Well, now, we used to have, as we went into relief, you was loaded up like a pack mule to take supplies into the line whenever you came from relief, such as coils of barbed wire, sandbags, picks, shovels, rifle ammunition, boxes of hand grenades, and so on. So there was always plenty supplied in the trench. Well, now, it came night time, got dark, a lovely, quiet night. And Pinky Brown came along, and we got this coil of barbed wire. Pinky Brown and this other 3, we slid over the top and crawled gently down to the wire. You had to be very, very quiet, because I told you we was only about 100 yards or so apart. So we had to be very quiet, and we slowly wound the barbed wire round from one post to another, because there was posts driven in the ground, and we wound this coil. It was a big coil and a stick through the centre so you could unwind it. And we'd almost finished the job when suddenly, bang, down I went. Well, now, I couldn't have shouted if I had that open fire, you know, with a machine gun. But anyway, I never made a sound. None of us made a sound. We laid quiet for some time, and eventually Pinky Brown and the others dragged me back. And when we got me to the trench, always remember, there was a load of our chaps waiting. They pulled me in. They sent along a stretcher bearers came along. They cut me putties off, ripped me trousers all up. It was wounded in the leg. And bandaged it up as well as I could, and the stretcher bearers then they took me back into the wood and through the wood, and there was ambulance waiting for casualties, and put me in this ambulance, and away we went. Well, now we went, they took me to a town, I think it was a biggish town, what I could recall of it, and it was a place called Beauval, I think that was Beauval, some name like that. Well, that's where they took me to, and when we got there, they took us into a factory, and it was like a large warehouse, and all over the floor there were stretchers here, there and everywhere, because they was bringing the wounded back from the Battle of Hill 60 at the same time, because the floor was covered with stretchers. And here's a strange thing, I lay there on the stretcher, and what they do then, a doctor comes along, examines you, looks at your wounds, dresses them, and sticks a label on your tunic, whatever it is. Well, in my case, the label they stuck on was severe leg wounds. And while I lay there was a chap come up to me. He says, "Hello, what?" I said, "Oh, blimey." It was a Brattle chap, and he was in the ambulance, the Stratford ambulance. Now, in pre-war days, Stony Stratford used to have a ambulance team similar to the Territorials. I think they was attached, as a matter of fact. Well, this chap named Green lived out the back of me, his brother did for years. But anyway, it was him. That was funny meeting him, and so of course we had a long old chat, and eventually then he was moved to the Rail Head. Well, it was a long train, there was loads of casualties, and they were fitted up very nice, those ambulance trains was, and beds all along, and I remember there was a chap laid just opposite me. There were two rows and a corridor down the centre, and the beds was each side, and this chap, we were googling and googling. So I said to one of the orderlies, I said, "What's up with him?" Oh, he said he'd been shot through the throat. And any road, before we went all that distance, he kept quiet, so he passed out. Well, now we went from there to Belong, and we went into a marvellous large building there, hospital, and it was named the Royal Pindy. That was the name of the hospital, and that's where they took me to. And I always remember, I thought how funny it was, because they never bothered with putting screens around beds, whatever you was, you, they looked after you, and if you died, you died, and that was that. Now, there was a chap laid straight opposite me, and I never see anything like it in my life. He'd had his leg cut off, I'd cut his leg off just above the knee, so you could see all the meat, and I could see that leg straight opposite me and all the veins in it, like cutting through a leg of lamb or something like that. I thought how funny it was. But anyway, we wasn't there long. They never kept us there long. And then they loaded us up onto a hospital ship. I forget the name of the hospital ship now, but I know it was an Irish boat called the St. Patrick. Now, I'm in a tangle now, whether it was the St. Patrick that I came on that time, or whether it was the second time I was wounded. But anyway, I know it was the St. Patrick boat that I was on one or the other, and it was fitted up beautiful. All nurses on it, they came along, they give you cigarettes or a pipe and tobacco, whatever you wanted. They looked after you marvellous. Eventually, we arrived from Belong to Dover. Now, when we got there, everything was organized to absolute perfection. We was carried off on stretchers from the boat, put onto ambulance train. There was nurses, ambulance men, looked after you beautiful. Well, we went from there, from Dover, to Chatham. And when we got there, we was taken there, or how many was taken, I don't know. But where I was taken, there was quite a large crowd, and all stretcher cases, we went to a large hall. What sort of hall it was, I don't know. It might have been a large church hall, but it held all perhaps 40, 50 beds, perhaps more, all round this large hall, and that's where we was taken to. Well, now, in the next bed to me, I'm telling the tale now, wandering, but don't matter. The next bed to me was a Scotchman. Now, he came from one of the islands right in the north of Scotland. He couldn't read, he couldn't write. So he asked me if I'd write a letter for him to his parents, and I did do. Now, in the bed next to me, the other side, was a Right Royal Turn. He was a chap in the Hampshire Regiment, and he came from Plymouth. Now, him and I, we got pally, and we kept together right through the hospital treatment, which I'll tell you about a bit later. Now, you can tell what sort of a lad he was. Oh, no, wait a minute. While I was there, my mother and father, two brothers, they came to see me there, so we was there several days. But this chap next to me, I remember one day his mother came to see him from Plymouth. He was a single chap. And we was right at the far end of this room, and his mother came in at the other end of the room, looked round and spotted him, and she came running down the room and bawling and calling, running up to him, and she'd got a, I always remember it, because women used to wear hats in those days, but you never see anything like it, what she'd got. She'd got a big hat on, there was feathers and flowers, and a proper big posh hat. And this, I always used to call him Mush. He looked at his mother, he said, before she could say anything, she was bawling, he said, where'd you get that bloody hat from? And that's the sort of reception she got. But it was very laughable. Now then, after a few days, we got moved from there to a hospital. I told you before, the VAD hospital was always the best. While the casualties was coming in about that time, very, very fast, shiploads of them. While now, there was just a small batch of us. I don't know how many come there, for sure, but perhaps a dozen. We went to a house at Strood. That's near, it's that way, no, Rochester, close to Rochester, Strood, that was it. And it was a large doctor's private house. There was about a dozen of us there, wounded. A doctor was there, a sister, and some VAD nurses. And they looked after us well there. Well, now, after a day, as soon as we got there, because they sorted us out what was wrong, and then we had operations. Well, when it came to the operation, you've heard talk of dum-dum bullets. Well, they were supposed to be, they was illegal, not supposed to be used at all. Well, now, one of those bullets, when it hits you, it scattered. In other words, the casing came off. Now, ordinary bullet with a point to it would go straight through you, or cut a bone in half and go straight through. But in my case, what actually happened, after the operation, they cut my leg open and they found pieces of a bullet, which was either a dum-dum bullet or it was an ordinary bullet that had hit the wire and split it up. Because why I'm so sure, they gave me some of it, which a casing of a bullet, of course, is copper casing. Well, now, the pieces they took out was all curled up, and one of the bits I've got now at home to prove it, and another piece me mother had and made a brooch of it, a curl, all curly, jagged. And the x-ray proved, the doctor told me afterwards, of course, said we couldn't get it all out because there's still a piece stuck in the bone, the back of your shin bone. And as far as I know, it's still there now. Well, after the operation, a few days later, instead of it going as it should do, healed up, it all swole up, my leg swole, it was me below the knee, my leg all swole up and went black, and the nurse and the sister and doctor decided, this was at night, decided that the next day they'd have to have my leg off. Well, during the night, that all burst and broke open. You never saw such a mess. It smothered everything. It burst and cleared it all out. And that, I've never had trouble with it since. The way they put you to sleep then was vastly different to what it is today. I simply laid you on the table, for operating table. Someone came behind and slapped a pad on your face, which was half ether and half chloroform. And do you know, that was an awful feeling. It made you feel as though they were trying to suffocate you. And it was awful feeling before you went off. Well, when you came round after the operation, you was as sick as a dog and felt awful bad. And you could taste that for days afterward. As we began to get better, there was four of us in a downstairs front room. And as the people went to work in the morning, the girls went to work in the factories nearby, they used to come to our window and shout at us and have a chat, and often leave some cigarettes for us. Well, now, there was the doctor there. Well, I got a faint idea. He must have been the local doctor, pre-war days. And there was the sister and two VAD nurses, and they looked after us marvellous. Well, now, as we got better, because we had crutches and learned to use crutches, well, now, that old mate of mine that I told you that we got pally with, the Plymouth chap, well, he'd got a bad wound in his foot, and there was half of his shoe blew away. Well, he hung on to that shoe. Well, now, what used to happen very often was some of the local people would come round with a car and take one or two of you out for a day. Well, now, anyone with a car then must have been very, very wealthy, because very few cars was about in that time. Well, I'd perhaps pick a couple of you up, take you out for a day and give you a good day's outing. Well, now, on one occasion, I remember that the local fire brigade took the whole lot of us from that hospital. Well, I told you it was a hospital because it was a private doctor's house. And the fire brigade came, collected us up, and took us to the local music hall. And because it was all organised previously, and they put us in a row right at the front. Now, on the stage that particular night, was a well-known lady comedian, which you often hear of even today. That was Mary Lloyd, a well-known comedian of those days. And after the performance, she collected us little bunch up, took us round the back of the stage and gave us all a drink. So we really enjoyed that evening. Well, we stayed on there until we began to get fit again, so that we could walk without having crutches. And then we had to go before a medical board to see if we was fit to leave hospital, which we did. Well, this chap was our pally with. We went together. We went to London from hospital, and he would carry that old pair of boots of his. He had them slung over his shoulder because he said he was never going to get rid of them because half of it was blew away. And I remember when we got to London, we went in, we had a few drinks, and those in the bar asked what he's doing with those boots hanging on his shoulder. So, of course, him being an old hand, he told the tale, and we didn't want for drinks at all anymore that dinner time when we got there in that pub. But now, from there, I went home for leave, hospital leave. Now, at that time, even then, there was no conscription. You fancy, all that time the war carried on and not even conscription was brought in. Well, anyone in civilian clothes then, a youngish chap, these girls, wherever you were, had an habit of giving you a white feather. Now, it happened like this. While I was home on leave, I got into me civvy clothes and I said to me mother there was a play going on at Northampton. That was the old repertory theatre at Northampton, and they was putting a play on then, and that was the Bing Boys, which you often hear sung today, the Bing Boys. So I said to me mother, I'll take you down and take you and see this play. Well, when we went up Gold Street, those that know in Northampton, Gold Street, we got to the top of Gold Street by the church there. What the hell is it now? I forget. The church at the top of Gold Street. And just as we got to the corner, there was a bunch of girls stood there. And mother and myself was walking the other side of the road. One of these girls came straight across from where they were, this bunch, and put a white feather in me jacket. And I never said anything because I'd done a grin to myself. I knew what it meant. But me mother, oh dear, didn't she fly in a temper? She told these girls what was happened, of course. That not only was I in the army, but I was home wounded. Well, now, anyone home wounded early in the war, well, you can see they were sort of two-a-penny heroes, as the saying is. And oh, golly, those girls, didn't they make a fuss and apologise? They said they were sorry, they didn't know, and they made a terrible fuss. But my poor old mum, oh, she was angry. It took her a long time to get over that. Well, as you can imagine, it was great to be back home again from the trenches, but it was not quite what you might expect, because when I came back here at that time, well, Wolverton and Bradwell was more like a ghost town, because all your mates had joined the forces, so there was hardly anyone about. If you went for a drink in the club or a pub, it seemed that all there was there was old men. Well, old men then, of course, that'd be middle-aged men over 40, that wasn't in the forces. Well, they appeared to us to be old men, and that's how it seemed, with the exception of perhaps a few here and there that had not joined the forces and wouldn't join. Well, of course, you didn't want their company, and that's how it worked out. Well, now, the bright spot of all was my old mate, Sid Carroll. He'd had quite a number of operations, and he'd come through them very well, and he'd finished with the army, and they found him a job in the office in the railway works, which he settled down to. Well, incidentally, he finished the whole of his life there in that office. Well, that was beautiful then for him and I to get together again. And we used to go about at night when he finished work and have a drink here and there, and we really enjoyed ourselves. Well, when that leave finished, I had to report back then to the headquarters, which was at Aylesbury. Well, from there, I was sent to Oy Wycombe, where there was a camp. Now, at that time of day, there used to be what they call sponsored regiments. I don't know who sponsored them in north of England, but there were several, and they were sponsored, but because they really was a proper regiment, but they sponsored a proportion and so called themselves that regiment, which they joined eventually. Well, now what I'm trying to get at, that applied here in Buckinghamshire, and there was a camp set up in the park at Oy Wycombe, and it was all tents. Now that was sponsored by the wealthy people of Buckinghamshire, and they called it, nicknamed it, the Jewish Battalion, which it was mainly, and it was sponsored by Lord Rosebery, Lord Rothschild, and millionaire banker from Bletchley, the Leon family. They was all Jewish millionaires, and they sponsored this so-called regiment. Well, it was really boiled down to reinforce the 1st Bucks Territorial Battalion in France. Now, there was a matter of 200 or 300 there, and when I was sent there, the tents was all up, and there would be, as I say, roughly about perhaps 200 there then, but there was one tent especially put on one side, which they call the Expeditionary Force Tent. Now, that was for those who had come home wounded from hospital and, like myself, reported back. Well, there was about a dozen or so of us in that particular tent, and we'd done no training whatever. We was let off for training, but the food, it was magnificent. We were well fed, everything we wanted, it was there for us. And us being Expeditionary Force wounded, had pretty well everything we liked to ask for. Practically the whole of the troops there was recruited from London. That was nearly all of them Jewish chaps, and also prominent London sporting people. They were mainly from Petticoat Lane, but the sporting people there was prominent national boxers. One of the main ones I can mention was Jim Sullivan, then the middleweight champion of England. There was him and several of the others, and it was the whole of his boxing school that had joined up entirely, and they was all there. Well, in the middle of the camp, they fixed up a boxing ring, and so they used to have that for training, and on Sundays they used to have a band there. The band played, they formed an own band, and they used to allow the public to come in on a Sunday, of a Sunday afternoon, and there used to be competitions and boxing matches every Sunday for the public to come and see.